pines, in the pines where the sun never shines. You'll shiver when the cold wind blows. There's a grave in the pines where the sun never shines. There's a grave that's shaded with a pine.
On the Slay Queens podcast, we take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
This isn't just a cheesy catchphrase. It is a note to remember that the topics we discuss can be very graphic and lurid in nature. Listener discretion has been advised.
Hey folks, before we get started, I just wanted to pop on and let everybody know that this episode is edited by your podcast editor.
Yes, and we love our editor, and you can start your own podcast and receive 2 edited episodes totally free. You can find him on Instagram at yourpodcastedit. And save time and take your podcast to the next level.
Ooh, Slay Queen.
Welcome back, everybody.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to the Slay Queens podcast.
Ooh, it is the Slay Queens podcast.
And that's Wayne.
That's Ashley over there.
Directly across from me.
Yes, ma'am.
And these are our listeners we are talking to.
These are the folks.
All the folks.
The folks that we are addressing. Mm-hmm. And Ashley, remind the folks what it is that we do here at the Slay Queens podcast.
I'm so glad you asked. We take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
We do. We do, in fact, do that with a lot of...
shenanigans and tomfoolery?
Tomfoolery. Yes, ma'am.
The deepest dive we can do into some shenanigans and some tomfoolery.
The absolute deepest of dives. Yes, that is correct. And it also sounds very titillating.
Yes, doesn't it? I agree it does.
Yes, 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 yes. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to all the queens, kings, and folks here to the Slay Queens podcast, where we do, in fact, take that deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. What show?
See, you're the one singing this week, and I was the one singing
that's
last
funny.
Week.
Yes. But there was like a commercial where I don't even remember what it was. I should probably tune into that podcast about all the 90s commercials to remind myself.
Yes.
I'm sure they probably talk about it.
Yes, I would imagine that they do. All right, Ashley.
Yes.
So, per use.
Per use! I'm like looking at you like, what?
We're killing it this week.
So
we're really killing it.
I'm so sidetracked by that. Where did that come from? Anyway, yeah, per usual.
Shall we?
Yes.
Dive into, before telling this story, shall we dive into a rainbow star?
We shall.
All right, everybody. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. Hi.
Welcome.
Thanks for coming.
Hi. Welcome to the shenanigans.
Welcome to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you're new here, we do a little thing called the rainbow star. Rainbow because we are queer people. Star because we are providing spotlights. We are offering thank yous. We are also making announcements or acknowledgements, and we are trying to give you folks recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
And
per usual,
I will kick us off. Yes.
Yes.
With absolutely nothing.
Like an anti-spotlight, basically. We did. We sat here for like 20 minutes trying to...
just going back and forth,
yeah.
Doing like little bits of research, mm-hmm. discussing topics. And we decided that it was serendipitous. And that we have absolutely nothing to spotlight this week.
It was like some things that we felt were like worthy, just it was like too much. We would just go on too much of a rampage. So there's a lot of things we feel passionate about right now, but we're going to just skip ahead to the
exactly.
thank yous.
And we didn't want to do an injustice to anything that we might spotlight this week by cutting it short
yes,
of
exactly.
what it deserves.
Exactly.
So we are going to move on from the non-spotlight this week and
right.
just. Move
forward.
Tread.
We're going to tread not so lightly, but we are going to barrel through.
Forward momentum into thank you territory. And I would like to thank Queen Ashley Jordan because she actually reached out to the queens and suggested the story that we are covering this week.
Okay.
And
I don't want to say excited. I was just going to say it. I'm not going to say it. But thank goodness for you, girl, because that was... such a good recommendation.
An amazing recommendation.
Yes.
We are both just boggled.
Yes. I looked at you earlier and I was like, this story is fucked. It's so yeah. wild.
That really is the best description. It's the best, most accurate description.
It's wild.
Yeah. So thank you very much for that, Ashley. And mm-hmm. we hope that you enjoy this episode because it's dedicated to you, essentially.
It really is. It's all for you.
It is. We would also like to acknowledge the fact that Asian lives matter,
mm-hmm.
that racism or discrimination of any kind towards that marginalized group of people or any marginalized group of people is not okay. It should not be tolerated and will not be tolerated here, at least on our platform.
Absolutely.
And to all of our Asian listeners, we love you and appreciate you so very much.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Yeah.
We love you. We see you. We hear you. And our hearts are breaking along with you.
Absolutely.
And yes. Just like everything you said, I couldn't have said it better myself. So thank you.
Thank you. And I think I'm going to slide the recommendations portion of this challenge over to you.
So, yeah, I was kind of just joking around when I said, I mean, if I were up to a spotlight, I would just spotlight Meryl Streep and how fabulous she is. And you're like, well, that can be a recommendation. So, yeah, you're right. She's so fabulous. I just think that she's the most wonderful woman in Hollywood for our Her Story. But also, we've been rewatching, Sierra and I being we've been rewatching, well, rewatching for me, first time for her. Big Little Lies. So it's kind of just like we're on the second season and I know where it's going to end up. And I'm just like so frustrated knowing that like I wish there was more, but just watching her in that role. And it's a character you love to hate, but she does it so well.
Well, she does everything so well.
She does. And what is it? I remember in Modern Family when, do you remember when Mitchell and Cam have like a lesbian couple over?
No, because I'm a bad gay and I never watched Modern Family.
Well, listen, it's on at the nail salon a lot anyways. So they have a lesbian couple over who they're friends with. They have like a little dinner party. And one of the lesbians says, they're talking about a movie. I can't remember what it is, but they say, I just don't think that Meryl Streep was the right person for the role. And cut to Mitchell sitting there. And he's like, no, it's Cam. It's Cam sitting there. And he goes, Meryl Streep could pay Batman and still be the right person for the role. And I'm like, yes, honey, I agree with you 100%.
So it is not incorrect.
If you haven't watched it, you read the book.
Yes, right? I read the book. I did.
So if you're a reader, the book apparently is amazing. And if you're not, then the show is amazing. Or watch both or do both.
Yeah, I read the book full disclosure, did the audiobook.
Yes.
And then I tried to watch season one. Mm-hmm. And I didn't dislike it. There was just something about it versus how well I liked the book that I just kind of couldn't
commit to. Well, I remember you telling me that you kind of envisioned, because the show had already come out. So you knew who was playing those roles, but you envisioned different people playing roles. And I can absolutely see it. Like Reese Witherspoon's character versus Nicole Kidman, I think was your big one that you brought up like forever ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you were correct.
I totally see why you would think that.
I saw the previews first, didn't know which actress was playing which character. Mm-hmm. And based on the knowledge that I had of the characters from the book, I assumed who I thought was playing what role and I was totally wrong. You were absolutely right. Thank you for reminding me of that.
No, I can see why. That always stuck with me though, because I can absolutely see why. And my response, I think, was that I just think the husbands they were paired with just looked better the way that they cast the roles. You know what I
You're
mean?
Right.
So, yeah, Alexander Skarsgård, though. Okay. Anyways, not in that role.
Yeah.
I should probably say I don't like his character in that, but he's still attractive. Anyway.
He's a fine specimen of a human being.
He is.
Yes. The actor, not the character
he
plays.
Yes, that's right.
And that show's kind of a big deal because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's the first series Meryl Streep has done in her entire career.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
she's only
never done
film prior to
a TV show. And I think maybe even Reese Witherspoon too. Like I've never seen her in a full TV show other than obviously later she's done other things. What was the one? Little Fires Everywhere that I've recommended before. Okay, so like I get them confused sometimes, like the storyline in my head because I watch them so close together. Mm-hmm. I love both. I will recommend both. Just don't watch them back to back because you will confuse them.
Okay.
So anyway,
All right.
That's that.
So
that's that on that.
I think we have officially completed a Rainbow Star.
Yeah.
I didn't think we were going to be able to do it this week, but we pulled it off.
It happened.
So should we take a quick break and then come back and tell this
bonkers
story?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's take a quick break.
Cool.
All right.
It's time.
We're back again.
Yes, we are.
Had to get that in there. Okay, are you ready for this?
I'm so ready. Are you ready, though? Because you're the recap queen.
I am the recap queen, which means
a tough row to hoe.
I have a Yeah, I don't even, I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to do this justice, but I promise you folks, I'm going to try.
All right.
I'm going to give it my all.
If anybody can, it's you.
Thank you.
You can do it.
Okay, so this week's episode takes us to a place that the Slay Queens has actually never been before, to the Snapped series.
That's so true. I was thinking that, actually.
This is our first Snapped.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who are unfamiliar, according to the show's Wikipedia page, Snapped is an American true crime television series produced by Jupiter Entertainment. The series depicts high-profile or bizarre cases of women accused of murder. Snapped premiered on August 6th of 2004 to the Oxygen Network. It has since become the network's longest-running original series, with its 28 defined seasons and 16 years in production. The show has also apparently had two spinoffs, which I didn't further look into, but I am intrigued.
Honestly, I was laughing at myself. I don't know if you caught that little snicker, but it was me laughing at myself because I've watched Snapped periodically, randomly pick up on episodes. Mm-hmm. Never once did it occur to me that all of them were women who had murdered. So I'm glad that you brought that up. Cool.
Yeah.
Glad that completely missed me over the last however many years. Awesome. But I think maybe Deadly Women was one of them because I feel like it's very similar. I don't
know.
We should look into that.
Yeah.
I feel like I messed up by not looking into that.
Well, I myself thought I should look into this, and then I realized that I was at the very beginning of this process and was like, no, I need to focus.
We need to do other things.
I need to focus. I have other tasks at hand. And as of November 22nd of 2020, 500 original episodes of Snap have aired. So
wow. It has been around for a long time, but I didn't realize for that long. Jeez. Yeah. Good for them.
All right. According to the IMDb page, today's show is season 24, episode 19 of Snapped. However, on Amazon Prime, which is where I was able to find it, I think that's also where you found and watched it, it's actually listed as season 24, episode 20. So there's a little bit of a discrepancy there, and I can't speak for why that is exactly, but I did note that on the episode list for season 24 on Amazon, they actually didn't include an episode 18.
Oh.
Yeah, the episodes literally jumped from 17 to 19. So, I mean, I suspect that had to have had something to do with it, right?
Interesting.
Yeah. All of that to say, if you folks are trying to watch the show, make sure that you don't purchase the wrong one.
Sure, exactly.
Because there's some conflicting information there. So just be mindful of the fact the title for this specific episode is Marcella Whaley. Or you can even be mindful of the description, which reads, quote, an investigation into the heinous murder of a college student in Las Vegas ignites an international manhunt and exposes a lethal love triangle, end quote. And that is to say the least.
The very least. Okay. Like, I might read that and be like, you know, crime of passion, it happens, but no. There's definitely way more to it.
There's way more to it. So they seriously undersell this story with that basic description.
Absolutely.
So let's dive into this. Our episode opens on January 15th of 2001 in Las Vegas, Nevada. The narrator explains that local 911 dispatchers are used to answering calls regarding the antics of tourists down on the strip. But something unusual happens on that particular morning. They receive a strange call from a quiet, middle-class neighborhood. According to both Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Detective Mark McNett and a prosecutor by the name of Frank, what did we decide we were going to call him? Como?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was complicated.
We weren't sure. It's a little bit complicated. We felt like we got some conflicting pronunciations throughout the episode. So we're just going to go with Frank Como. The actual call was placed by a gentleman reporting that a man had run out of his neighbor's home, half naked, bloodied, begging and pleading for someone to call the police. Las Vegas Metro parole officers were dispatched to that address. When they arrived, law enforcement would actually find two young men at the residence in question who were both injured and bleeding and reporting that a female named Satsi Sanchez had been viciously attacked by intruders and was in need of medical help. Making entrance into Satsi's bedroom, police discovered that the woman was bound and gagged in her bed, lying in a pool of blood, having obviously sustained significant trauma to her head and face. On closer inspection, it was determined that sadly, the woman was deceased. With the discovery of Satsi's body, homicide detectives were summoned to the scene. But before we hear more about the gruesome scene itself and the investigation, we have the opportunity to learn who she was as a person.
Back to the old ways of who the fuck was Satsi? We haven't done that in a while.
A throwback.
Yeah.
So, who the fuck was Satsi Sanchez? Satsi Sanchez was born in Mexico City in 1974 to a prominent family. Her parents were business owners who made sure that Satsi's upbringing was happy and that she was well provided for. This included a good education from grade school through high school, and the family wanted to continue that into college. In order to help facilitate success for Satsi as a businesswoman in her adult life, the parents sent their daughter to the exclusive University of Nevada, Las Vegas, to study hotel management. In order to make certain that Satsi's time in Las Vegas was a good, safe experience, so tragic.
Mm-hmm.
They did everything they could, right?
Absolutely.
A good, safe experience, the family also set her up in a suburban home that was just a few miles outside of the city. A comfortable ranch-style house, which she would eventually share with a close friend whom she'd met in Vegas by the name of Carlos Rene. By all accounts, during that time of her life, Satsi was in a comfortable home. She was doing well in school. She even had a good job at a popular Latin restaurant slash bar. According to her friend, Tony Mayen, who we meet later in the episode, the only thing Satsi's life lacked was companionship. She had recently broken up with a boyfriend and confided in him that she was lonely.
I loved him, too.
He was great.
He was so cute.
He was just the cutest.
Mm-hmm.
Then in spring of 2000, Satsi met 29-year-old Marcella Whaley. According to Tony, Satsi was drawn to Marcella's big, boisterous personality, and she was also attracted to the woman's curly hair and sexy looks. Here we...
That's like every girl. It's so funny because Sierra and I watch this together and that's like her typical type. I'm like, yeah. Oh, you'll like this one.
This should speak to you personally.
Right.
All right. Here the audience gets a little bit of background on Marcella. Like Satsi, she had been born and raised in Mexico by an affluent family. At the age of 23, while studying broadcast journalism in college, Marcella met and fell in love with a woman. A 17-year-old... Well, let's just call her a girl.
That's what I'm saying,
yeah.
A woman.
Because I have a little bit of an issue, and I'm glad that you're addressing it as well. A little bit of an issue calling this 17-year-old person a woman. But regardless, Marcella met and fell in love with a female.
Mm-hmm.
All right. According to Detective McNett, Marcella's traditional parents did not approve of this relationship, nor did the community in which the two women lived. Despite her parents' disapproval, Marcella committed to the relationship with Kimberlyn. That was the woman's name. I think I missed it. Her name was Kimberlyn Estrada. She committed to the relationship with Kimberlyn to the extent that she left college and the two actually moved out of Mexico together. The couple first lived in California before ultimately settling in Las Vegas, where the two women obtained work at a local warehouse. Which Detective McNett was seemingly very entertained by.
I know.
Because he had this like goofy grin on his face and he tells the interviewer, quote, Marcella had kind of an unusual job. She operated a forklift, end quote.
As if women aren't supposed to do that or something.
As
or
if
surprising.
As if he's literally never met a lesbian in his
That's
entire
what I was
life,
thinking.
Right?
That or he was like trying not to laugh because he has. And
yeah.
He didn't want to be like, of course, you know what I mean?
Maybe. That's actually a really
good
perspective.
Could be one or the other. I don't know. But yeah. Either way, it was pretty funny.
Yeah, but I literally have in my note here something to the effect of, so there's a woman doing work that like cisgendered heterosexual people traditionally believe should be done by a man.
By a man. Mm-hmm.
And this woman happens to be a lesbian. Groundbreaking. You know what I mean?
I am so shocked.
Yeah. For the next 2 years, Marcella and Kimberlyn would spend their days working in the warehouse and their evenings exploring the Las Vegas nightlife. There was one particular restaurant slash bar, which was reportedly really popular amongst the local Latin community, that the two women often frequented. And if that sounds familiar at all, it's because this also happens to be where Satsi Sanchez worked and where she would ultimately meet both Marcella and Kimberlyn. The three women became fast friends, but Marcella and Satsi's attraction to one another was difficult to hide. Soon the two women were having an affair, which was quickly found out by Marcella's long-term girlfriend. A fight broke out between the two, and Marcella ultimately decided that after having been with Kimberlyn for 5 years, she was going to leave her and move in with Satsi.
Ugh, heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking, dramatic.
5 years for that age, too?
Yeah.
All dramatic. It's like it's a scene from a TV show.
Well, literally. Inspired by life.
That's
but
right.
Yes, yeah, we've seen a lot of dramatizations and a lot of fictionalized TV shows that also portray characters in situations like this. So that summer, Marcella and Satsi moved into the largest bedroom in the home that Satsi shared with Carlos Renee. Though the new couple was reportedly falling in love, Marcella, quote, felt guilty leaving Kimberlyn in such a lurch and asked Satsi for a favor. Ashley, would you care to enlighten us as to what exactly the favor was that she asked?
Yeah, she felt bad. So she asked if Kimberlyn, her ex, could sleep in the house and live in the guest room, which while I'm watching, I'm like, wow, that's a lot. But then I think back to myself at that age and I'm like, I totally would have done something like that. I could totally see it. I mean, you think it's wild, but you're also like, from a lesbian standpoint, you're like, I could see it. I might have done that at one point.
I was mind blown.
I'm sure.
I literally, in all caps
most
here.
Most other people would be.
In all caps here, I have no, 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 absolutely,
absolutely
not.
Absolutely not. I knew you were going to say absolutely not. Yeah. No, absolutely not. Yeah, it depends on the woman you're with, but like I can totally see this being a situation.
Yeah. I mean.
Even though most people would be like, absolutely not.
Live and let live. But for me personally, no, ma'am.
Definitely not now. Definitely not now. But yeah. I thought in hindsight, okay, when I was a young budding lesbian. and to be fair, they do talk on the fact that like for Marcella and Kimberlyn, that's essentially the only family they had.
Yeah.
So I can see Marcella's like sadness in feeling bad. Like I brought you here and now you have no one. But she would have found someone. Anyway, let's continue.
Let's continue. We digress. So Satsi agreed to this. She agreed to let Kimberlyn move into a guest room in the home and essentially just be one of their roommates, which, again, mind-blowing, but...
it's a bit much.
Regardless, all three women were now living together, and to the outside world, the relationship between Satsi and Marcella is flourishing. That is until Satsi Sanchez turns up brutally beaten and dead in her own bed. The audience now cuts back to the morning of the crime. The two bloodied and injured men, which had been found inside Satsi's home, are now identified as the roommate, Carlos Renee, and his, air quotes, friend, Tony Mayen.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think they ever came out and said it, but for me, it felt like it was heavily implied that Carlos and Tony were actually a couple.
The whole story...
it
kind of
really
makes it feel
did.
That way.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, there are going to be a few details here that I think the folks will agree that it sounds like maybe they were more than just friends.
Friends.
While the two men were treated for their injuries, investigators begin a thorough inspection of the residence. They find that the home had been trashed in a way that suggested a party had recently taken place. Satsi's room, however, had been trashed in a different way. It appeared to have been deliberately ransacked in search of valuable items, many of which seemed to be missing. This would suggest that perhaps she had been the victim of a robbery gone wrong. And content warning here. However, additional evidence would indicate that more than just a robbery resulting in murder had taken place. A condom found inside the bedroom indicated to detectives that the victim may have also been sexually assaulted. With this in mind, as well as the level of just brutality of the injuries that she had sustained, investigators are now of the belief that Satsi may have known her assailant, thus making Carlos and Tony suspects number one and two.
I did like how they said that, too. They kind of talked about how we knew they could be lying to us. This could have been a staged scene, but of course they're going to be number one and two because they were there.
They were there. Exactly. In questioning Tony Mayen, law enforcement learns that the men had attended a barbecue, which was held at the house the night prior before going out to a bar. The two were actually not supposed to return to the residence that night, but Tony tells them that they drank too much at said bar and ended up back in Carlos's bedroom. Wink, wink. By the time they had returned to the house, Marcella and Kimberlyn had already left for work that morning, and to their knowledge, the only other person inside the home was Satsi. That is, until they woke up to two men breaking a bottle of wine over Carlos's head and holding the two men at gunpoint. Tony and Carlos were bound, they were covered with a blanket, and they were threatened to be killed if they attempted to escape the house at any point. They remained in that position for what felt like an eternity until hearing the intruders flee the house. Tony was then able to untie himself. He was able to untie Carlos, and the men rushed into Satsi's room to check on their friend. They found the woman unconscious and unresponsive in a pool of her own blood, at which time Tony ran outside and began screaming for help, thus bringing us back to the opening scene of the episode. Mm-hmm. Now, in questioning Carlos Renee, law enforcement learned that he shares the residence in question with Satsi Sanchez and her ex-girlfriend, Marcella Whaley, and her new girlfriend, Kimberlyn Estrada. ..
Did you hear that?
Did
right?
all the folks catch that?
Did you get all the names before? Yeah. Maybe we need to do a little rundown.
Satsi's ex-girlfriend, Marcella, and her new girlfriend, Kimberlyn. So do you want to give us some background on who those people are, Ashley, in case anybody's...
How do you explain it? So Marcella and Kimberlyn move into town. Marcella and Kimberlyn meet Satsi. Marcella starts dating Satsi and moves into the house with her and asks, can my ex-girlfriend Kimberlyn come live with us? Fine. Then, and I did a little bit of research, apparently they did say that Kimberlyn and Satsi started kind of bonding.
Yeah, oh yeah, I have a lot more about that later.
On that, apparently it was very abusive, so they ended up joining together. And now it is Satsi and Kimberlyn and Marcella is out.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But a lot of names, a lot of moving parts. And,
a lot of moving parts.
things were not as we thought they would be at this point, but we're going to learn why. Carlos went on to explain that in recent months, Satsi had developed an emotional connection with Kimberlyn, which led to a physical relationship and ultimately to her breaking off her relationship with Marcella, which is what you have just explained to us, Ashley.
Yes.
Marcella then was forced out of Satsi's room into the room in which had previously been occupied by Kimberlyn, while Kimberlyn took her place in Satsi's bed.
Yeah.
And there is no victim blaming there.
Not at all.
It's just a lot to keep up with. Mm-hmm. And again, I feel like these are choices that a lot of people wouldn't have made.
That's
I'm too jealous for all that shit.
Oh, and that's what happens. Like, that's where, I don't know if it's just in a testimony to the empathy that these women all tend to have for one another, but it just, there's a reason why, like, when you split, you need to split.
Yeah.
You don't just stay, like, lingering in it.
At least for a period of time, you have to give yourself time and space to legitimately move on. And then you can reconnect maybe as friends after healing has taken place.
The healed up process has happened. Yeah. Those wounds aren't open and you're looking at that person differently now.
Exactly. All right. According to Carlos, Marcella initially struggled with this surprising turn of events. Surprise, surprise. But over the last few days,
shocking,
seemed to be warming up to the new dynamic. In fact, Marcella had been the one to suggest that they all throw this like barbecue or this party as a demonstration that there were no hard feelings amongst the group. She had even invited a new girlfriend to the party, which indicated to all the other housemates that Marcella was in fact moving on and that she harbored no ill will towards anybody. The only additional information investigators are able to obtain from Carlos and Tony regarding the crime are the facts that the perpetrators were both Hispanic men that they couldn't really identify. They said everything just happened so quickly, we can't even give you a basic description of them other than the fact that they were two Hispanic men.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's very accurate. I can't even imagine.
And that during the attack, the intruders or the perpetrators were asking questions like, where are the drugs? Where's the safe? Where's all the money? And this, of course, led the investigators to suspect that Satsi may have fallen in with a bad crowd and gotten mixed up in something that she shouldn't have necessarily, and that that made her a target. But while they ponder that theory, they decide to first eliminate their two newest suspects, who, of course, were Marcella and Kimberlyn.
Of course.
The women are contacted by police, and they're asked to return home as soon as possible. Arriving to the scene, they are both notified of Satsi's murder. Kimberlyn was reportedly in shock at the news, whereas Marcella seemed nonsensical and was behaving erratically. For those reasons, the detectives decided to give them both time to calm down before continuing with the questioning. They shifted their focus to identifying the items that were missing from the home. It's determined that Satsi's jewelry, her computer, her video camera, and her car, which I feel like maybe they should have noticed right away.
That's what I was thinking too. I'm like, why are we just now bringing that up?
Yeah, but her car, which was a white Nissan Pathfinder, was also missing. Mm-hmm. A BOLO, or be on the lookout order, is issued for the vehicle. It's also around this same time, which seemed really fast to me, but it's also around this same time that the official cause of death is determined, and it's determined to be asphyxiation by strangulation. The medical examiner's report makes it clear to detectives that the perpetrators made it a point to be as brutal as possible in the attack, that they, quote, were sending a message. Though they firmly believe that this message had been sent by someone who knew Satsi, Carlos, and this, of course, is the police, though they firmly believed that this message had been sent by someone who knew Satsi, Carlos and Tony were cleared as suspects pretty quickly due to the physical evidence at the scene corroborating their version of the events.
Sure.
And of course, Marcella and Kimberlyn were pretty quickly cleared as well because there was proof that they were both at work at the time that the crime had taken place.
Also, want to make a side note about they showed all the pictures from the crime scene and everything, and it looked like a very large party had happened, right? There was bottles everywhere. I mean, just typical college age party. And I remember thinking when they said that they had gotten up for work and left for work at like 7 a.m., I was like, oh, to be 20 years old again. Oh, there's no way I could do that. Like, how did they do that?
Yeah, I definitely don't have it within me. At almost 40.
That's what I'm saying. No way. But you know what? You miss those days. No, I don't.
I don't.
That's right. I do and I don't. Yeah. Anyway, as you were.
With only a basic description of the assailants and no real leads in the case, investigators' hopes for solving the crime hinge on locating Satsi's vehicle. Information about the white Nissan Pathfinder was shared with the public via a local news outlet. And before the end of the broadcast even, police already had a lead. A gentleman phoned in anonymously to report that a man he worked with may be in possession of Satsi's car, and that that same man had been bragging about having killed a woman. As proof of the fact that he had committed a murder, he had shown the caller a pair of gloves which appeared to be bloodstained. He explained that the blood on the gloves was, in fact, the victim's blood. The man went further to say that he'd beaten the woman, that he had sexually assaulted her, and that he had strangled her to death. These, of course, were all acts that we know Satsi suffered, but at the time, they weren't details that had been released to the general public. So they take this tip very seriously. The tipster identifies his coworker as 23-year-old Luis Barroso. Please follow up on this information by going to the location the caller advised the vehicle would be, and they found it. They found it with even some of the stolen items from Satsi's home inside. Also, upon discovering the vehicle, law enforcement realized the location itself may have been of some kind of importance.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the white Nissan Pathfinder was parked only about half a block away from the warehouse in which Marcella Whaley and Kimberlyn Estrada worked.
Yep.
Coincidence? Question mark? The investigators did not think so.
I think not.
And looking further into this potential lead, they discover that the anonymous tipster was a coworker of not only Luis, but also of Marcella and Kimberlyn. So this is all starting to track.
It's all tracking. You're right. It's all coming together.
Learning that Marcella and Kimberlyn had a connection to Luis didn't actually immediately move the women back to the suspect list, but rather the investigators were concerned that they actually might be potential future victims. So to question the women and to also ensure their safety, law enforcement reached out only to be able to contact Kimberlyn. Only Kimberlyn, because the detectives learned that Marcella had disappeared again, after having been initially questioned on the day of the murder.
She gone.
So she hit it right after they left. She hit it.
Bye.
In fact, Marcella had cleaned out her bank account. She had quietly packed her belongings into Kimberlyn's car and fled town, which, of course, was very suspicious. Very suspicious behavior.
That is sus.
So police issue a bolo for not only Marcella, but also for Kimberlyn's vehicle, while also asking Kimberlyn to come down to the station for further questioning. In doing so, police learn that Kimberlyn actually knew of Luis because they worked together at the same warehouse, et cetera, but she didn't actually know the man, which I could believe that. I mean, totally. There are plenty of people that I've worked with that I knew of, but didn't have the opportunity to get to know.
Absolutely. Me too.
She did, however, notice that in the days just prior to Satsi's death, he and Marcella had been very chatty with one another around the workplace. Detectives also take this opportunity to gain some sort of clarification about the relationship dynamic among the three women in the months leading up to the crime. Kimberlyn reports that Satsi's relationship with Marcella had become strained when Marcella began being obsessive and controlling of the young woman. Obsessive and controlling to the extent that she had started cutting Satsi off from her other friends and from any form of social life outside of their home. Under those circumstances, with a very limited number of people to turn to, Satsi began confiding in Kimberlyn. At first, the two women were just venting about the comparable experiences that they had had with Marcella. Apparently, she had also been very controlling and a bit abusive with Kimberlyn.
Listen, I've had a girlfriend of an ex see me in the bathroom at a bar, not even a gay bar, just literally a bar downtown that was just a coincidental thing, that cried to me about everything that I had broken up for that ex-girlfriend for. And the worst part was that ex walked in as she was like sobbing on me. And I'm just like, arms up, I'm not doing nothing. it wasn't me. She's crying. I don't know. I'm leaving. Bye.
Exactly.
But it's like, what else do you do other than just give them advice?
Yeah, you have the unique perspective of being out of that situation and having had the opportunity to learn from it. So
that's exactly right.
You're the one person that she felt like could relate to
understand
her the most. Yeah. So they started bonding over these comparable experiences they had had being in a relationship with Marcella. But eventually that bond began to become emotional. And then that relationship became intimate. So in early December, Satsi broke off her relationship with Marcella and began openly dating Kimberlyn. In response to this, Marcella isolated herself to her bedroom and had minimal interaction with any of her other roommates for several weeks. That is until just days prior to Satsi's murder, when Marcella emerged from her room and asked her housemates to join her in playing a game. Insert creepy Saw, I'd like to
do you want to play a game?
Exactly. Voice here, because that's totally what this is. Marcella wanted everyone in the house to verbalize the worst possible way they could imagine being killed. And if the folks are wondering, Satsi's response was being bound, raped, and strangled to death. It was after this game that Marcella seemed to snap out of her slump. She started being more cool, calm, and relaxed and friendly with everyone again. And she even suggested the aforementioned party or barbecue, they referred to it as both, as a sign of good faith and friendship.
That is exactly what they said. And then, hey, we're all good here. Let's have a party to show how cool we are.
All this information, of course, gives Marcella Whaley ample motive to have committed the crime against Satsi. But police are reminded that she is proven to have been at work when the murder occurred. Mm-hmm. Also, witness accounts, aka Tony and Carlos's accounts of what had happened, state that Satsi was killed by two men, not just one man, and certainly not one man and one woman. Continuing to look into Luis, law enforcement obtained a search warrant for the home that he shares with his family. An inspection of Luis's room turned up Satsi's video camera, which had been stolen from her home, as well as the aforementioned bloody gloves, the ones that have been mentioned by the anonymous tipster. At this point, police are now confident that Luis is one of the two perpetrators, but who was number two? Who was the second man in question? And speaking of questioning Luis's brother, who was actually at home at the time the police officers were there performing the search of the bedroom and whatnot, detectives learned that on the morning of Satsi's murder, Luis had come home driving what?
What do you think?
A white Nissan Pathfinder, but he wasn't alone. Accompanying Luis on that particular day in that particular vehicle was an old friend. An old friend who was 26-year-old Obed Mariquin. And I apologize if I messed that pronunciation or that name up. Investigators now have two male suspects, and they have enough evidence to issue arrest warrants for both.
Enough evidence, I would say.
Yeah.
There are no pencils involved in breaking the trace evidence or whatever. Like, this is real evidence.
The circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, that's right. Circumstantial evidence. Thank you.
Yeah. So Luis is quickly arrested at the warehouse in which he worked. And for the first time, the audience gets an opportunity to see Luis as a photo of him flashes across the screen.
Okay.
So put a little pin in that.
Are we going to unpack that later?
Yeah, because we're going to talk about that in just a minute or two.
All right.
Luis immediately lawyers up and refuses to cooperate with the investigation any further. In serving the arrest warrant for Obed, police also conduct a search of his residence and locate more incriminating evidence. They find Satsi's missing computer. So now detectives know who committed the crime, but they still don't know why. And most importantly, they don't know where Marcella is. It wouldn't exactly take a long time for them to start getting answers to some of those questions, because even though Luis wasn't speaking, Obed sang like a gay man on his opening night in a Broadway musical.
He truly did, though. Yeah.
Detective McNett tells us that Obed started speaking, or he started talking, before they even got him into the interrogation room.
Oh, he was ready, honey. Yeah. He was just like, I'm so done with this.
Yeah. Obed explains that Luis had gotten to know Marcella while the two were working together in the warehouse. He goes further to say that Marcella had actually started flirting with Luis, to which Prosecutor Como says, quote, now, you have to understand that Luis was not an attractive man. And suddenly here you have this very attractive female who has started flirting with Luis, end quote. I would like to preface with two things. One, Luis was not necessarily someone that I myself.
Luis reads very much like a less attractive Richard Ramirez.
Okay.
To me, that's what he looks a lot like.
I will give you that.
Because of the teeth. Like, you get that part of it, right?
Yeah. So beauty comes in all shapes, colors, sizes, etc. I will give this prosecutor, I'll give Mr. Prosecutor the fact that, again, Luis is probably not somebody I personally would have been attracted to, but
sure.
I feel like he could have said that just a little
nicer.
In a
different way, I totally agree.
A little bit of a different way.
I watched that twice and I was just like, each time I'm just like, okay, man, that's a little harsh.
It's
right.
Pretty rough. Let's get back on track. We almost have all the answers. All right. Because of the flirting, Luis actually thought that there was potential of a romantic relationship developing between he and Marcella. However, she had something else in mind. Marcella actually asked Luis for a favor instead. She asked him to kill her ex-girlfriend, Satsi Sanchez. In exchange for this, Marcella promised Luis that he could take all the valuables, all the drugs, and all the money that they could find from the house as long as they made sure that Satsi was killed in the process. And that's where that whole, like, where the drugs like thing happens.
Sure.
She lied to them and said, I guess it was just greater motivating factors.
Absolutely. Why would I only do that?
Exactly. She said, there are a lot of drugs in the house. There's a lot of drug money. There are just all sorts of expensive things. Take all of it as long as you do these horrific, terrible things.
And well, what about the other thing?
I'm getting. And that brings us to the other thing.
Yeah.
Finally, Marcella reportedly offered Luis the one thing he wanted more than anything else, her virginity.
Mm-hmm.
If Luis followed her precise instructions on how to victimize Satsi, Marcella would sleep with him, therefore making him the first man she'd had sex with, and subsequently the person who, air quotes, took her virginity.
That's right.
The precise instructions included what Marcella knew to be Satsi's worst nightmare: to be beaten, to be sexually assaulted, and to be strangled. Oh, and also to make sure that Satsi knew that all of this was happening
because of
Marcella.
It's a very Game of Thrones, like, tell her it was me. Yeah. I want her to know.
I want her to know that. Exactly.
But honestly, we had this on, and I have to preface this by saying that Sarah, my fiance, right, is from San Antonio, Texas. So she's sitting there and she's like, well, of course he's going to do it. Every man would do that. And I'm like, well, that sounds very sexist. And she's like, I don't mean to say it that way, but I'm just saying, imagine being him. And I'm like, okay, if you say it that way, it's a little different than saying every man would do it for that. No, I don't think they would. I don't think Wayne would.
No, absolutely not.
I don't think many of the men that I know would, but I can see what she meant by like looking at him, seeing his life and being like, okay, well, I could see him doing that. And I could see all the other things that she added in.
Yeah.
It's even mentioned some of my research that I have, the reason why he was able to bring this, was it his brother or his friend?
His friend.
His friend along was basically the promise of all those, that other stuff. It was a robbery for him. I just saw him. I'm like, that's very sexist. You can't say that.
No, absolutely not.
You cannot.
Incorrect information.
That's right.
But as you said, Louise actually agreed to the plan. In doing so, he enlisted the help of his friend, Obed, who later sang like a canary.
I like your description better.
Yeah, the other one was way better.
Yeah.
I sat and thought about that one for a while.
That's a good one. I liked that.
It was something I felt like the folks and the listeners could
appreciate
and relate to. On the morning of January 15th, the men arrived to Satsi's house to find that a window in the rear of the home had not been properly secured. They forced that window open and made entrance into the residence, where they found Satsi asleep in her bed. Louise began to beat the woman, and they both then began to bind her hands and her extremities with electrical cords that they found from appliances inside the room. At that point, Obed began searching the house for valuables, which is when they discovered Carlos and Tony, and then subdued the men. According to Obed, thereafter, he continued searching the house for whatever it was that they could steal, while Louise continued beating, sexually assaulted, and ultimately murdered Satsi. Regardless, though, of who actually performed what evil deeds, both men were ultimately charged with conspiracy to commit murder and first-degree murder, which was classified as a murder for hire, which, if convicted, carries the possibility of a death sentence.
And it should.
Yeah. With now a full understanding of the fact that Satsi's death was a result of Marcella's jealousy and her desire for revenge, detectives set out on an international manhunt, or as I'd prefer to call it here on the Slay Queens podcast, an international them hunt.
That's right.
Yeah. Gender neutral, please and thank you. Police receive a tip that Marcella had been spotted almost 1,200 miles away from Las Vegas in Mexico. Working with Mexican law enforcement, they are able to determine that she had, in fact, escaped back to her hometown of Durango. Prosecutors want to get her back on U.S. soil, but Mexican authorities refuse to send her. Once again, this whole situation is classified as a murder for hire, which carries the possibility of a death sentence or a death penalty. The Mexican legal system does not recognize the death penalty and therefore will not extradite someone back to a country in which they may be put to death for their crimes. They do, however, detain her in a local jail, which I thought was amazing.
Absolutely, yeah.
They detain
her. And
we've
heard this before in other cases a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they detain her in a local jail, just kind of awaiting some sort of compromise or resolution between the two agencies. That way she can't run any further, any faster,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, it's smart.
In the meantime, Marcella's co-conspirators stand trial back in Vegas. In February of 2004, a jury finds Luis guilty of the charges against him, but before his sentence could be determined, the prosecutor made a deal with the defense team. The deal was for life imprisonment without the possibility of parole, but also without the possibility of death or the death sentence. Luis took that deal. And then in May of that same year, Obed actually pled guilty at his trial and was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after serving a minimum of 40 years. Then after months of legal wrangling, both the prosecution in Las Vegas and the Mexican government reach a compromise. Both parties agree that Marcella will stand trial for the murder of Satsi Sanchez in a Mexican court. Despite worries that Marcella may not receive a punishment that fit the crime, she was found guilty of the murder and sentenced to 39 years in prison. We close this episode with our friend Detective McNett telling the audience, quote, "People have asked me for years as a homicide detective if I believe in good and evil. Well, once you meet Marcella Whaley, you know the answer to that. that's evil, end quote.
That's right. He's like, we're going to go out on a strong
exactly.
note, and that means something.
Yeah, he wanted to make a statement. Mm-hmm. And that is all I have. Ashley, I hope that you have a little bit for us at least.
I do. It's a closed case, right? So we always talk about how there's not too much. But I've got a couple little pieces of information that we didn't really learn. Because you and I talked off script really about yeah. how they kind of just fast forwarded.
They really did. Yeah. We jumped from, okay, this is the case we have against these people to, oh, and now this is what they're being charged with.
So a lot of what I have is just kind of more in depth into like how and why they were charged the way that they were. And then a little bit of an update for the parties that are still free and available okay. and all of that.
All right. I would love to hear that. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back for those updates.
Yes, let's. And we are back again.
Yes, ma'am, we are.
I'm going to do it. I did it.
You did it. Yay.
I did it.
Look at all the beauty you bring into the world.
I'm trying so hard every day. But we're back for the updates, the research
queen. I'm ready.
Side.
I'm ready. Lay it on me.
The one thing I wanted to bring up was they do actually cover this case in the show Deadly Women. It's season 5, episode 16. I wanted to watch it, but Hulu starts at season 8 and all the YouTube videos have been removed. I did the legwork, trust me. Yeah. I tried, but I thought it was more the way that they kind of play this. They do the quotes that I've seen from that episode, they kind of harp a lot more on Marcella's abusiveness. So okay. if you're kind of more intrigued by that side of the story, maybe if you have like the expensive Hulu, you might be able to watch it. Ooh, but yeah. it's out there somewhere. It's on Deadly Women. So in any case, most of my research comes from the LasVegasSun.com. And I've got quite a few articles that are, it's mostly me going to, like I said before, like delve into more of how we got to where we were when it came to the sentencing, because they kind of fast forward through everything. And then I've got a couple little like updates for everyone. So I'm going to start with the first article, like chronologically that I could find from that website was August 13th, 2002. So not far after all of this happened, like yeah. this was very rapid. So it says here, and I'm just taking snippets. I'm not reading all the whole article, just little snippets that kind of tell the story from a deeper perspective. It says a former Las Vegas woman suspected of hiring two men to rape and kill her former lover last year has been arrested in Mexico. Chief Deputy District Attorney Frank Como said Marcella Whaley, 31, was arrested in her hometown of Durango, which we've talked about, within the last 2 weeks. Extradition proceedings were underway. And what he says is, we gave him the assurances that we would not seek the death penalty, and we are waiting to see if the Mexican authorities will honor our request to extradite her. The process took a couple months, and they say that she will be appointed an attorney on her arrival in the United States, which obviously we know never happened. But to me, it's chronologically working out this way. December yeah. 2nd, though, of 2002, an alleged murder-for-hire case involving a lesbian love triangle that was to go to trial today will be continued after the defendant's claim that he is intellectually disabled.
Oh.
So Luis claims, and I'm going to put this out there because I changed the verbiage of yeah. what they wrote, because it is not PC and not okay with me by any terms how they kind of coined that term of yeah. what he was claiming.
The actual terminology they
exactly.
used.
Exactly, yeah. They did look into that, which we could buy. I could mm-hmm. see you and I talked a little bit off script. Like, it's hard to believe that a man who literally has no crime history, no mm-hmm. rap sheet, I've looked up his intake form, no felonies, no nothing, he's done nothing in his past, would just immediately say, okay, yeah, I'll go rape and kill someone yeah. for some drugs
yeah,
or some sex. That's kind of wild to yeah. me. So it,
unless
it's a little bit,
exactly.
Right?
It makes, we're not giving anybody a pass on anything,
right,
but
right.
it almost makes more sense that someone would
be persuaded.
Yeah. Someone who could be easily coerced
yeah.
would maybe be into doing something so vicious and so terrible mm-hmm. would be someone who maybe had a few developmental delays.
Exactly. It makes me think a little bit of like Making a Murderer.
Yes.
That
yes.
whole series. It's so heartbreaking because it's so hard to tell because you're understanding that this person doesn't necessarily have the same intellectual or social cues as other people or the yeah. rest of us, however you want to spin that. So in any case, February 2004, so a year and what, like 2 months later. And another article says, during a hearing on Thursday, Luis Barroso, 25, agreed to the sentence of life in prison without parole for what we've already talked about, which we already know. Jurors convicted Barroso of first-degree murder and other charges in the case on Wednesday. As part of the deal, Barroso agreed to give up his rights to appeal the case. And then I liked this quote, so I kept it in here, of Frank Como saying the defendant will never get out of the Nevada state prison system for the rest of his natural life, which makes you feel a little bit better, right?
Like, it does.
We know what's happening, but just that little, like, it's kind of driving it home makes us feel a little better. But Obed was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole in 40 years. It was first-degree murder and 2 counts of kidnapping, and then also with the use of a deadly weapon for his involvement. So he got a couple extra charges, which I feel like we needed to know because it helps.
Absolutely.
It helps us feel a little better.
He wasn't that old. He was, what, 23, I think?
Yes.
26? He was in his 20s.
Yes.
So
26.
He could conceivably, if he spends 40 years, he could conceivably come out and still live
a healthy, full life.
Yeah, a healthy like portion of his life as a free man.
The older I get, the more I feel like your 60s are a full life.
For sure.
It's true, though. You could. Yeah. I mean, if you're in prison, say you decide to live the healthiest you possibly can while you're in there for 40 years, you could absolutely just have a very full life ahead of you. But I kind of continue this on for an article from May of 2004, and they had used that same exact paragraph that I just said, and they continue it on by saying, quote, he, which would be Obed, was not involved in the conspiracy and had nothing to do with the murder-for-hire dynamic present in this case, which was his attorney, Darren Richards, said, he went in just to steal some stuff, and when he entered the home, he saw 2 potential kidnapping victims. So it leads us to believe he had absolutely no idea what he was really getting himself into. Because I know that's kind of a question, right? Like, did the other party say, hey, we're going to go kill someone, and you can just steal some stuff? Or did he just say, hey, we're going to go rob
We're going to break into this house.
Sure. So Richard said under Nevada's felony murder rule, it didn't matter that he did not commit the murder or know the plot. He was guilty of murder because the kidnapping led to murder. So good, right? These are all making us feel a little better, I think. Richard said, luckily for his client, though, the state was on the same page and offered this agreement after realizing that he didn't know that the murder was going to happen. So they give him an agreement, too, which was that's why they gave him that 40-year agreement kind of thing. Chief Deputy District Attorney Frank Como, again, agreed that he never knew that the murder for hire was the plot of the whole story and that he had no idea what was going on. He said, we had a jury trial for Barroso, and it became very clear that he and Whaley, which was Marcella, are the 2 involved that agreed to have done this. A jury found Barroso guilty of 10 felony charges.
Wow.
So it wasn't just a murder for hire that he was put in prison for. It was including first-degree murder, sexual assault, and kidnapping, which obviously I would like to dive farther, but I tried real hard. I mean, I've got their intake forums. And they're both in jail still. They're really interesting descriptions. I was telling you, I'm like, they're classified as both being large people. I'm like, so is every person either small, medium, or large? I don't know what that means. Yeah, but
it's a bit odd.
Right?
Well, you also pointed out how his intake photo was.
Yes, he is beaming.
He looks
from
like,
ear to ear.
He literally looks like it's a day at Disneyland.
Literally. It's wild. And that's not what they show in the Snapped episode.
No,
they show
it's
not. An image of him, but he doesn't look happy. This picture I showed you, I was like, we should use this because why does he look so excited to be there? Wild. So Whaley, which Marcella, she faced the charges in Mexico where she fled following the slaying, as they like to say, which I love.
I appreciate that.
For allegedly orchestrating the killing that authorities said that she was the one who called all of this. So we kind of know what happened with her. We got more, I think, information on her situation than anyone else. But I did a little bit more digging. And so mylifeofcrime.wordpress.com tells us that she was sentenced to the 39 years in prison. And they have kind of like a little rundown, right? I'm going to kind of surmise everything. So Marcella Whaley, a.k.a. Luz Marcella Villanueva Soto, they all have so many aliases, which is wild to me. Tried in Mexico, convicted, sentenced to 39 years in a Mexican prison, and I keep it in a Mexican prison because I feel like that has to be worse. Like, that's why they have it written there.
Yeah.
Luis Barroso, convicted, sentenced to life without possibility of parole. And Obed, pled guilty, sentenced to life in prison, eligible for parole in 2034. Obed, though, out of all of them, if you look at their intake forms, he has more aliases than any of them. And he's never been convicted of anything. Part of me wanted to go back and like
check
look
all of his
into
aliases.
All of his aliases, but you know how I get into a rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. We all have the potential to do that. So
I would waste my whole day.
Exactly.
Save it. So the only other thing, though, is Kimberlyn Estrada.
The entire time, I'm like, WTF, what's going on with Kimberlyn?
Kimberlyn, she seems to be doing well. I mean, I found her Facebook page, which you know is my favorite.
Yeah.
And her quote, like her biography, just in all caps says, "Life is great," with a bunch of exclamation points, which I don't know if that's just like an homage to people that might be adding her mm-hmm. and saying things for no reason. Like yeah. she's maybe just trying to live her own life. And like, I hope she's in therapy and working through it. It yeah. seems so. She works at the House of Blues in Las Vegas. She's in special events, which means she's probably, that's a pretty good job to have.
Absolutely.
And I had this moment where I was like, I've never been to Vegas. I love the House of Blues, though. Maybe I could go see her. But you know how many other people probably have thought that mm-hmm. since they've seen this episode? So I'm just like, well, maybe I'll notice her and I won't pretend like I noticed her. I will never walk up to her, but...
And I'm sure Ashley means that to sound far less creepy than...
than it came off. I yeah. know. I was thinking that too. Like, that sounds really like... I'm going to actually do a drawing of her on a napkin and then I'm going to walk
you
up
should.
To her.
You should do... What would we call that? Something like a doodle?
A doodle.
You should do a doodle and just like walk up to her and be like, hey, I made this caricature of you. Would you like to go hang out in like darkened beach?
No, I won't. No, that did sound really creepy though. You're right. No, I did have that brief moment where I was like, oh my gosh, that's somewhere that like people go all the time. I'm sure she gets that constantly. Mm-hmm. Like people like, oh, how are you doing? Like, I've seen your episode of whatever you watched, because there's plenty of them out there. But yeah. But also it says there that she is a banquet server at the Siena Bistro. So she's still living in Vegas. She's still beautiful. It's a very private Facebook. And I'm not going to add someone just because I'm doing a story yeah. about them. But yeah, seemingly doing well. And in my mind, that just means that she's at least hopefully gotten someone to confide in that yeah. can help the PTSD that I'm sure is present when something like this happens at yeah. such a young age. But it makes me happy to see that she's seemingly doing well.
Yeah, she's thriving and she's doing well in her life despite tragic things that have happened.
Yeah, because I've done the research before and found that people that are still alive and involved end up in prison or they do terrible things. And you never know what's going to come of that because PTSD is a very real, intense thing. And through no fault of their own, you can fall down this awful, terrible hole. And I'm just really happy to see that she yeah. looks amazing. She seems amazing. If you hear this, you go, girl. Yeah. You did nothing wrong.
You
we love
you. You did nothing wrong. And you obviously developed healthy coping mechanisms and not the unhealthy kind.
Absolutely.
And good for you.
Good for
Slay
you.
Queen.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's why we call ourselves that.
Absolutely.
So that's really all I have. I mean, I know it's not, it was a little redundant, but I felt like there was more to the case that we didn't get to hear about. And just knowing that Kimberlyn is doing all right.
Well, good. I'm glad that you provided us with those details because oftentimes these shows go into so much detail about a few like components or aspects of the story, but then we don't get as much in other places.
Sure.
So yeah, those are definitely things that I was curious about. So thank you for that.
Yeah. The really only other thing that I mentioned before that I thought was crazy was they talked about how abusive she was. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, maybe, maybe not. But that's the only other thing that was different
yeah.
versus the Snapped episode. So I do recommend out of all of this Snapped, that episode was a really well
It was really good.
Episode.
I knew that this story was covered by a couple of other programs, mm-hmm. a couple of other docuseries. And I think actually the one that was suggested to us wasn't the Snapped episode.
Okay.
But
it was probably the Deadly Women one.
Yeah, I do believe that it was now that you're mentioning it. But the story itself just seemed like it was so well done by Snapped. I was like, hey, we should do this.
It really was.
Suggested. So I highly suggest it as well.
Yeah. And I learned that I like doing cardio watching these episodes now. So I can get two things done at once at this point.
I mean, that's invaluable information.
That's right. You texted me at the right time. So anyone listening, if you're maybe thinking you want to do some more cardio, maybe you want to get to the gym more, this episode is the perfect episode.
Yeah.
For a good 30, 40 minutes of light cardio.
Yeah. Watch that episode first and then come back and listen to this episode of the podcast.
And see what you're thinking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. See what you're thinking about, how we covered it.
Don't do the reverse necessarily because we definitely give spoilers.
Oh, we spoiled all of it. We spoiled everything. You're not even going to want to watch it now.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Ashley. This is always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you to all the queens, kings, and folks, yes?
All the big thank yous.
All the big thank yous.
We love you.
To all the wonderful people. Yes. And if they want to reach out and thank us for the good work that we're doing, or just reach out and give us constructive feedback, how could they do that?
SlayQueensPod@gmail.com. I said that first because I'm looking at the email right now. We also are on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We have our Patreon that's always open and available if you want to subscribe monthly or just maybe donate a little bit of your dollars for our editing purposes.
Exactly.
Anything like that. Yeah. Just we would love a 5-star rate and review on iTunes. That's our favorite. We get super excited about those things.
We love those.
I don't know if everyone else does, but we get real excited about
it. We do. I literally every morning I wake up, it's one of the first things I do is I look to see if we got a new one. Sure
I used to every day, but now I feel like that's maybe like once a week. I'm not as, but.
You're not as obsessed as I am.
I love you for that, though.
Yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Because I know, though, if I miss something, you're going to tell me.
Absolutely,
like if it's necessary, So
for sure.
Yeah. We have all those platforms. We're out there. And you can listen to us pretty much anywhere you want to.
That's legit.
It is.
That's legit.
And I always feel so kind of like, I don't know, when my clients ask me at work, like, where can I listen to your podcast? I'm like everywhere.
Everywhere.
I kind of feel kind of like
name something.
Literally, just Google my name, honey. We're out there.
I had a really nice experience yesterday. I was at a, again, very appropriate, very socially distanced, et cetera, et cetera. I was at a drag show, and the drag queen who was the MC of the show was doing the whole give it up for and give it up for like all of these people. And she's like, and give it up for local podcast celebrity of the Slay Queens podcast. Wade is in the audience. And
I'm sorry, was it PhD?
It was PhD. But still.
I love you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have called it out, but I just wanted to because I knew that she's probably going to listen.
Oh, yeah,
so.
For sure. So we love her and we thank her.
We do. That's so
awesome.
Check
out her show, folks, E19
Bar.
That's
a good feeling, yes. And I cannot wait to go. Of course, I said to you earlier, I'm like, I would choose the one Sunday that it's like gorgeous outside and it's the first Sunday where you're like, oh, we have this thing in Cincinnati where it's warm outside and we decide we have to day drink.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so upset that I chose that day to have like 7 clients at the salon.
There will be more.
So yes, I will be coming to see you. Not that you're holding, you know, sitting on the edge of your seat waiting, PhD, but I'll be there.
She'll give you a shout out too.
Both of us.
Yes.
Maybe we'll get a photo together.
We
all
should.
All of us.
And we will post it to the social medias.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, we've gone on long enough.
We have gone on long enough. So in the meantime, go out and...
go out and slay, queens.
That's right.
Just not each other.
Not each other and not...
not your ex-girlfriend's new girlfriend, who's also your
ex-girlfriend. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
All of that.
Bye, folks.
Bye.
I'm going away, but I won't come back. On a lonesome railroad line. But I can't forget that sweet little girl who sleeps in the pines and the pines.